and gents, this is the moment you've waited for.
And now, here's your host, Clint Arthur.
All right, everybody. This is Clint Arthur, and welcome to the greatest show of all time, right here on WABC Radio in New York City. And today's episode is all about celebrity entrepreneurship and storytelling. That's what we're going to be talking about all day today. And I want to start off with who I think is like the greatest, pretty much the top of celebrity entrepreneurs. See, what I'm talking about when I say celebrity entrepreneur is I mean they're not really famous, but they're still, in the eyes of their customers and prospects, if you're a celebrity entrepreneur, you are somebody very special. Now, if you're a person who goes to seminars, if you're a person who goes to self-help, personal development stuff, Tony Robbins means a lot to you. Now, in this episode, I'm going to be talking about Tony Robbins. I'm going to be talking about Mike Tyson. I'm going to talk about Caitlyn Jenner. I'm going to talk about Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones. I'm going to talk about Suzanne Somers and the Most Interesting Man in the World and Buzz Aldrin. And I'm also going to talk about Bill Clinton. Okay? These are the people I'm going to talk about in this episode. So all of these people, now, one of those things is not like the other ones. See, Tony Robbins is not like the other ones. Tony Robbins had a show on NBC a few years ago. It was called Breakthrough with Tony Robbins. And you probably didn't watch that show. Not a lot of people did. It aired six episodes and then it got canceled. Because why? Because Tony Robbins is not famous. Tony Robbins is not a celebrity. He's a celebrity entrepreneur. And today I saw a post on Facebook from Tony Robbins, and it really exemplified exactly what I talk about in my book, Celebrity Entrepreneurship, and exactly what I do with my students and my clients, many of whom become my good friends, when I teach them how to become celebrities in the eyes of their customers and prospects. Hey, man, on the greatest show of all time, it's all about how to be more, do more, and have more. You want to be more so you can do more and then have more. More impact, influence, and income. If you're a CEO, an entrepreneur, a business owner, this is for you, see? Because what you really need to do, what you really need to be, aside from being more, is more of a celebrity in the eyes of your customers and prospects. You need to be a celebrity entrepreneur, a celebrity CEO, a celebrity business owner. If you were a celebrity, then, you know, let's face it. Think about your competition. Are they selling the same thing as you? Are they selling something similar to you? Are they selling basically the equivalent of what you sell? And what's the difference? The difference is you. You're the only difference. You know, you're selling a widget. You are selling the widget. And I can't change the widget. I cannot change the quality of the widget. All I can change is the quality of you in the eyes of your customers and prospects, because perception is the game that most people don't even know is the game. That's really what we're trying to do here in the world of marketing, is to change the perception of who you are in the eyes of customers and prospects. And I saw this post by Tony Robbins on Facebook. Who is Tony Robbins? Tony Robbins is the world's top personal transformation coach. You know, you probably, like, Tony Robbins became somebody many, many years ago when he was doing infomercials to promote his Personal Power tape sets. He was like the first real breakthrough infomercial guy. They hired a bunch of celebrities to give him testimonials on his infomercial, and they ran those infomercials like nobody's business. First time I ever heard about Tony Robbins was from this girl. Man, back in the day, you know, I graduated from the Wharton Business School and I moved out to Hollywood to chase the Hollywood dream after I found out that my father was not my real father. I said, I don't want to be an investment banker anymore. I don't know who I am. I certainly don't know what I want to do when I grow up anymore. And I ran off to Hollywood after the Wharton Business School. And when I get out there, I start writing screenplays and going on auditions and going to film festivals. I went to the Cannes Film Festival in Cannes, France, on the French Riviera. Like, I think I went to it 3 or 4 times. And, you know, mostly it's about drinking. And here's the thing that I never understood, even until this year, is that that whole party scene that you do when you go to the French Riviera, that whole scene of going to the parties and that whole Hollywood party scene, you know what that's really about? That's really about getting photos with celebrities. That's what it's about. I had this friend, and I was talking to him about his PR company, his publicist. And he goes, man, my publicist, all she did for me was send me to parties. All she did was tell me to go to parties. Yeah, well, unfortunately, these publicists, what they really need to do is they really need to educate their clients better, because the purpose of going to parties is to get photos with celebrities. That's the purpose. And nobody tells anybody that. And then once you have those photos, people don't even know how to use those photos. People don't even know what to do with those photos. It's funny. It's really, really funny. But anyway, when I was going to the French Riviera, one time I was hanging out on the patio at the Carlton Hotel, drinking Campari and soda and eating little tiny olives, which were so delicious. They had these little green and black olives there. I mean, so little. And like, you know, they're just bigger than the pits themselves. The pits were like the size of a cherry pit, and the olive was just a little bit bigger. Man, those were the days. And I meet these people there, and I get introduced to this girl. And man, this girl, she was cute. She wasn't as cute as she thought she was. She was cute, but not as cute as she thought she was. And she was trying to be a director. And she was working this money man guy, some older guy that she was trying to work to get him to invest in her movie. And I became friends with this kid, Jonathan, whose father wrote, Jonathan's father wrote a movie. Man, what the heck was the name of that movie? A famous movie, okay? It was like Love Story or something like that. And, you know, his father was somebody. And this kid, he was like pretending to be somebody. And I ended up becoming friends with this kid. He was a cute little kid. He went to my college. He went to the University of Pennsylvania. I'm a graduate of the Wharton Business School, part of the University of Pennsylvania. I become friends with this kid, Jonathan, and we decide we're going to write a script together. And back in LA, after the Cannes Film Festival is over, oh, let me tell you one more thing. I'm going to add in another celebrity. So me and Jonathan and this girl go to the Hotel du Cap. That's like the place, right, where all the big celebrities are hanging out. We go there because we want to see if we can like get into some kind of high-level party. Supposedly there was going to be some kind of high-level party at Hotel du Cap. So we get in a taxi, and I think we spent like $60 on a taxi to go there. And then when we get there, we go into the lobby, and it's like real quiet. It's like 11 o'clock at night. Meanwhile, the Cannes Film Festival is raging in Cannes, but at the Hotel du Cap, it's like way subdued. We go there, there's not much going on, and we're like looking around, and we're standing by the elevator, and who walks out of the bar? You ever see the movie? Did you ever see the movie with Sharon Stone called, what was the name of that movie Sharon Stone was in, that cop movie with Michael Douglas, right? It was right after that. Like, who walks out of the bar carrying 2 martini glasses? I don't know what was in the martini glasses. It wasn't clear like a martini. She was carrying 2 drinks in martini glasses, wearing a negligee. Sharon Stone comes out of the bar in like this mauve purple negligee, carrying 2 glasses, like martini glasses. And she goes to the elevator and she can't open the elevator because she's got her hands full. And the little girl, this little blonde girl, opens the elevator door and Sharon Stone goes in the elevator. Okay. All right. Back in LA, I'm writing a script with Jonathan and he's renting a room in the girl's house. And all of a sudden, and like, this is the girl who introduced me to Tony Robbins. She had a Tony Robbins book. She was going to a Tony Robbins seminar. That's the first time I ever heard about Tony Robbins. This would be around like 1992, 1993, somewhere in there. All right. this girl, next thing I know, Jonathan's like, hey, man, pick up the phone, listen in on this call. And he's like, so what did you just say? And he goes, and the person goes, yeah, she was riding a horse bareback and the horse threw her and she broke her neck and she's dead. She was 28 years old. She was trying to be a director. She was riding a horse bareback in New Mexico. The horse threw her and she died. I tell you, this life is something else. It really, truly is. All right, Tony Robbins. Tony Robbins is about as famous as you can be without being a celebrity. He's not a celebrity. If he was a real celebrity, his show would have stayed on the air, but he's not. What is he? He is a celebrity entrepreneur. And I saw this post by Tony Robbins on Facebook today, and it exactly illustrates my point about what celebrities do. See, celebrities hang out with other celebrities. This is like the key foundational issue of celebrity entrepreneurship is that celebrities hang out with other celebrities. So Tony Robbins posts this picture on Facebook today of him and Mike Tyson. And it says, underneath the picture, it says, of all the uniquely inspiring people I've had the opportunity to meet over the last four decades, whenever people ask who was the most interesting encounter, I always say, often to their surprise, that my time with Mike Tyson was perhaps the most fascinating. When we met, I was blown away to see this man, supposedly an aggressive beast, show a different side than most people would ever know or expect. For example, did you know that he's an avid reader of philosophy and psychology? During our time together, he quoted Nietzsche and Machiavelli, the Bhagavad Gita, the Bible, and the Quran. Mike and I met 22 years ago when I was called in by his team to work with him right after the incident with Holyfield's ear. I learned that Mike's history is one filled with pain early and often, both given and received. His journey began in one of the toughest neighborhoods imaginable, and his childhood was riddled with extreme distress, grief, drugs, and alcohol, and agonizing loss. Mike was trained, conditioned, hypnotized, and highly rewarded for afflicting pain on other human beings. He became a beast by his own description. What's most remarkable, though, is that now, decades later, he has completely transformed his life. Mike and I recently reconnected and recorded two in-depth, hour-long conversations that we're excited to share with you. In the latest episode of the Tony Robbins podcast, you'll hear some of my story, one that will truly help you develop a level of understanding and compassion for all humans and see how we can be conditioned to behave completely different than that of our true nature, spirit, and soul. Click the link below to have a listen. Then head on over to Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson, where we turn the tables and Mike interviews me. All right, and there you go. See, that's Mike Tyson and Tony Robbins hanging out together, and Tony Robbins is attaching himself to Mike Tyson, and that's celebrity attachment, my friends. That's what I call unicorn hunting. I go out of my way to get pictures and stories with Mike Tyson. Now, when I met Mike Tyson, I brought a whole bunch of my clients to meet Mike Tyson. And we all got pictures with Mike Tyson. And I tell stories about Mike Tyson all the time. I said, Mike, champ. I said, champ, what's the most important thing you ever learned? He said, stay humble. That's exactly what he said and exactly how he said it. Stay humble. And I tell you, a lot of people think celebrity is about ego. It ain't about no ego, folks. It's about one thing only. Marketing. Celebrity is about marketing, and that's all it's about. Fame is about marketing, and that's all it's about. Because if you're not humble, if you let it get to your ego, if you let it get to your head, then you get in a lot of trouble like Mike Tyson. It ain't about ego. It's just about getting the word out. It's about getting the word out for free without paying for spots, for ads. It's about just like talking. It's about being a guest on shows. It's about speaking. That's what it's about. And when you got stuff, you know, it's about making stuff happen. And when you got stuff happening, then you need to protect that stuff. And I'm really excited to bring on my good friend, the smartest guy I know when it comes to technology and cybersecurity, Mr. Greg Hanna, the CEO of Toss C3. And Greg, thanks so much for coming back on the show. And what are we talking about today?
Well, this week, Clint, we're going to cover the dark web.
Ooh.
Cover what it is and celebrities on the dark web and their information and the fact they can never get it off. Mm. So what is the dark web? All right, stick with me a minute while I walk you through this it's not super technical, but a little bit different. The dark web is a hidden universe contained within the deep web. The deep web is a sublayer of the internet that is hidden from search engines like Google, Bing, and Yahoo. These engines only search 0.4% of the entire internet. Imagine that. I mean, let's call that 0.4% the surface layer, the very top of the web. The other 99.96% of the web consists of database, private, academic, and government networks, and the dark web itself. It is estimated that the dark web is about 550 times larger than the surface web and growing. You know why? Because you can operate anonymously without a trace. The dark web holds an abundance of stolen data and encourages illegal activity. I mean, let's talk about celebrities now and, you know, why their information ends up there and how it gets there. Most recently, about a year and a half ago, was an Instagram hack that affected 6 million users and exposed personal information of celebrities and loaded that into the dark web. I mean, some big names, you know, you'll know, like Emilia Clarke, your good pal Snoop Dogg. I know you guys are tight.
Snoop Dogg.
Floyd Mayweather, Beyonce, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Taylor Swift. The bug that allowed that Instagram hack was fixed, you know, but that doesn't get the information off the dark web. It's going to live on there forever. And there's a huge list, I mean, a bigger list of other people's information out there that you'll also know, like Emma Watson and Zac Efron and Channing Tatum, Harry Styles, Lady Gaga, Rihanna, Britney Spears. I mean, the list goes on. I mean, even Adele stuff is out there.
What I want to know is, where are the text messages from Strzok and Page out there? That's what I want to see.
You know, another dark web celeb situation when Justin Bieber and Selena Gomez were breaking up when they were a famous couple, and hackers hacked Justin Bieber's phone and grabbed the whole text conversation and posted that on the dark web. But you can still Google and find it. It's amazing. So I know, Clint, you're always helping people do more, be more, and have more. You know, what are your thoughts around dark web? Are people asking you about it? Are they concerned as celebrity entrepreneurs?
You know, I know one story where one of my celebrity entrepreneur clients, her nephew was buying drugs on the dark web, and he got caught, busted by the cops, ruined his whole life. Before he even had his driver's license, his whole life was destroyed. And, you know, it affects people on many different levels. How do you help these people to protect themselves from the naughty, nasty stuff going on the dark web?
Ah, man, you know, it's tough, but a couple of years ago, I developed this service, you know, that I call ID Guard. And basically what we do to help businesses, and I can't do this for individuals, but we do it for business to business, is getting their domain name. So that's their email address, you know, the .com piece or the .tv piece, like clintarthur.tv, tossy3.com. It's that domain. And we monitor that. And a company has one or more of those. And we monitor that for any hack that might happen from a service that they use, like, for instance, Amazon or even Google or TripAdvisors. These places get hacked and people's usernames and passwords get stolen. And many business people use their business email address as their username. And they use their business password for their personal stuff as well as business, because, you know, people are lazy as humans. And so we use the same password as often as we can. So that company gets hacked. You know, thousands of or millions of names get grabbed, the usernames and passwords, and then people use those against them to not just, you know, buy things and drop ship at different addresses, but to actually, you know, do some industrial espionage or to break into a company and get on their information. So what our service does is it monitors those domain names 24/7. And the second there's a breach, we immediately notify that client. We get them to change out their passwords. We scrub out what we can on the dark web, remove it, and then go back into a Sentinel watching mode till the next time it happens.
Amen for that. I mean, in this day and age, a lot of times the best you can do is react to the breach. If people want to get help in reacting to the breach or protecting themselves from cyber attacks or setting up information systems, I strongly recommend, if you're an entrepreneur, a CEO, a business owner, you call the smartest guy I know when it comes to technology, Mr. Greg Hanna, CEO of TossC3 at TossC3.com. Check him out and get in touch. I believe the phone number's on the site. Yes?
Yes, it is.
All right, cool. Let him know you heard him here on the greatest show of all time on WABC Radio. Greg, we'll look forward to having you back next week.
Fantastic, Clint.
You know, it's hard to believe that we're already in the month of August and people are getting ready to go back to school. And there's a lot of kids everywhere, not just celebrity kids. Celebrity kids are going back to school. I was watching Monique on a TV show last night. She was talking about how she's sending her kid to a boarding school in Switzerland for $60,000 a year. And she said that he failed every class, including gym and lunch, and she wanted to punch him in the throat. Hey, I'm so happy to have on here the Money Miracles expert. You hear her in the background, Angela Sticka-Snyder, my darling. How are we going to make miracles with money with back to school?
We can definitely make miracles with money with back to school. Would you believe that the National Retail Federation did a survey and back-to-school spending is expected to top $80 billion? That is amazing. And you know what? For whether you're a celebrity entrepreneur or you're just, you know, going back to school or have kids that are going back to school, it is the best time to get your office supplies because everything is like ridiculously on sale. And they'll price match. And so what is a great thing to do is it's not always the best thing to do with things online, but get your Amazon app. And when you're out shopping around for items, check on Amazon. See where all the best and the cheapest prices are to get stuff because we are so pressured to overspend by our kids nowadays. I don't care whether you are, you know, just a kid down the street or whether you are a celebrity, you know, all kids are pressuring us over and over and, you know, more and more to spend more than what we need to. Did you know that there's 13 states that offer tax-free days to shop for back to school? Unfortunately, New York is not one of them. New York's not one of them.
Which are the states? I'm really curious because this show is up on iTunes and it's all over the country.
It is. You know what? I will post it on my website on Taxanista. And you can see it there. I don't remember them all, but I do know that there are 13, and it's not Arizona, California, or New York, but there's a lot of them. And a lot of them are on the East Coast. And it usually runs from about August 1st and 2nd to the end of the month of August.
What you're saying is that people should do their business supply shopping during back-to-school sales. That's really smart.
That's what we do, is because everything's on sale, and we're not going to school, but we sure need those supplies. So we go and stock up, whether it be computers, you know, to little supplies. But another thing is there's lots of ways that people can get free supplies. So you want to check and make sure that your school or libraries aren't offering, you know, the laptops for free. Some schools are doing that now. So check before you go and buy all that stuff. You know, before you go buy it all, check and see if there's free resources around nearby you.
Better to get free than to pay. I know that for sure. And I love that idea of the tax holiday for back to school. That is super smart because, man, these days, taxes are reaching deep in your pocket. I was at the W in Miami Beach for the last 3 weeks, and because I'm an elite member, they were giving me 25% off on anything that I had in the restaurant. But you know what? Local taxes were 25%. Tax and tip was 25%. So it was basically they were giving me free tax and tip. It really does add up these days. Yes, there truly are. And if you are having an issue keeping up with the many taxes that confront business owners today, entrepreneurs today, you definitely should check out the woman who can make miracles with money at taxanista.com, providing remote bookkeeping, accounting, and tax prep services. She's a super smart person, and make sure you tell them that you heard her on the greatest show of all time. Angela, thanks so much for coming on this week, and we'll have you back next week and excited to hear what you have for us then. All right. Well, I want to continue on now talking about these celebrity stories, okay? These unicorn stories. See, I am into unicorns. I hunt unicorns. That's really what I do. I go out there and I hunt unicorns for business purposes. It's funny. My wife used to always, like, she'd come up in my office and I'd be at my computer and it'd be 1 o'clock in the morning. She'll be like, "What are you looking at on your computer?" This was a long time ago. "What are you looking at on your computer?" I'm like, and I turn around the screen and it's marketing. It's like, that's all I'm interested in. Marketing, business. All I'm interested in doing is marketing and business. And I've developed this new kind of thing and I call it unicorn hunting, unicorn safari. Who wants to go on a unicorn safari? I do. What I do is I go to places where I'm going to meet a celebrity. That's what I do. I just go to a place where I know I'm going to meet a celebrity. How do I do it? A lot of times I have to buy a ticket or I have to make a donation to a charity. And I go to the celebrity event and I get a picture with the celebrity and I ask my question, "What's the most important thing you ever learned?" I told you what Mike Tyson said. You know what Caitlyn Jenner said? I said, "Caitlyn Jenner, what's the most important thing you ever learned?" She said, "Stay humble, just like Mike Tyson." Just like Mike Tyson. Caitlyn Jenner said to stay humble. And here's a person who's won multiple gold medals in the Olympics. She's been on multiple episodes of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Caitlyn Jenner says, stay humble. I'm telling you, none of this is about ego. Celebrity. People hear the word celebrity. They think, oh, you know, giant ego. It ain't no ego. It's marketing. And another great one, I met the most interesting man in the world from the Dos Equis beer commercials. He was a speaker at a conference I was at where I was a speaker. He was a speaker for the Entrepreneurship Club of Harvard Business School. Took place at the Harvard Faculty Club in 2015 and 2017. Both of those, he was there. And I said, Jonathan, his name is Jonathan Goldsmith. I said, "Jonathan, what's the most important thing you ever learned?" And he said, "Stay thirsty, my friend." Now, that's just a line straight out of his commercials. But you know what? It's a great metaphor for life. Because I tell you, when you don't have something that's really driving you, pushing you, forcing you, that you're not passionate about, life is not so much fun. I tell you what, it's those days when I'm really driven, when I'm jumping out of bed in the morning because I got so much to do, because I'm thirsty, hungry. I'm hungry. Like Les Brown would say, you got to be hungry. That's another one. Now, Les Brown, I don't know. I don't know if you know Les Brown. If you know Les Brown, he's, you know, somebody, he's a great speaker, really amazing speaker. He's not a celebrity. He ain't famous. And the impact of fame is ginormous. I mean, tell me, what's the quality of a famous Amos cookie besides the fact that Amos was famous? What's the quality of a famous Amos cookie? Is it particularly good? Soft, chewy? I have no idea. You think about a guy like George Foreman. George Foreman, you know the George Foreman grill. He was a boxer. What's the best thing that George Foreman did in his whole boxing career? The only thing I can think of with George Foreman's boxing career is that he got knocked out by Muhammad Ali. See? But then George Foreman went on to become the George Foreman grill. Do you know that he sold more than 100 million grills? See, but that's fame. That's fame. And what I do is I hunt these famous people. I call it unicorn hunting. I go to places, I go to events, I put myself in positions where I'm going to meet them. Sometimes I meet them just naturally. Like, you know, look, everything I do, this is about how to be more, do more, and have more. And after a while, after you've been more for a while, and you've done more, and you have more, it changes you. You change. You become a different person. Do you become famous? Well, not really. Do you become a celebrity? That's what I'm talking about. See, because I started vacationing at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. Last 4 summers in a row before this, my wife and I went to the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. 30 days, 60 days. We were there 60 consecutive nights last 2 summers in a row. And you know who shows up one day? John Travolta. John Travolta is just, you know, there. He's got the presidential suite, of course. We're not in the presidential suite. We have a one-bedroom suite. But John Travolta's there, and I got some clients there. And MJ Jenkins, one of my dear friends and clients, she, man, I was so pissed. She goes up to him in the restaurant and gets a selfie with John Travolta in the restaurant. I'm like, oh, man, why don't I have that one? And it took me, you know, I had to really hunt him down. I knew that he was attending a function that night, and I had just made it my business. I just sat outside that function in the ballroom, and I waited for him to come out. And I waited there like, you know, I knew he was in there. I waited there for like 25 minutes or so, and finally out comes John Travolta. And I'm like, I stand up, I got my selfie camera in my hand, and I go, hey, John, can I get a quick selfie? And he comes like right up, nose to nose with me. I thought he was going to kiss me. I thought I was going to be making out with John Travolta. And I don't know, you know, I don't know what would happen. But anyway, there he is, nose to nose, like looking at me right in my eye. I go, hey, John, can I get a quick selfie? He comes right up and looks at me right in the eye. And he goes, okay. And boom. And there's the picture. I'll put it up on the website, thegreatestshowofalltime.com. I'll put that picture up of me and John Travolta. Hey, man, you know, you start going and doing things, and before you know it, celebrities are in your world. They're just in your world. But it doesn't happen just, like, naturally. Like, okay, so, for example, there are certain people who become famous. How do you become famous? I don't know how you become famous. Lightning has to strike. Like, how do you become Kato Kaelin? See? Who's going to give you a prescription for how you're going to become Kato Kaelin? You can't. You can't. But what fame used to be manufactured, celebrity used to be manufactured. I'm going to give you a little history lesson. The television networks would manufacture celebrities in certain ways. So, for example, they would make a contract with a particular sporting team, like, you know, WOR would have the Mets, right? And they would televise the games. And then after the games, they would bring the players on for interviews. And then they would have the players come into the news room and do an interview on a Saturday. They would manufacture the celebrity for these players to add value to the contracts that they had with these teams. That was the original way. Sometimes you see the post-game interview on the field or on the court. They're building the celebrity of the players so that the contract they have with the team is worth more because they got famous people. And everybody's attracted to famous people. They want to see famous people. Then the networks got really creative and they made these reality television shows. And they said, hey, we're going to have Survivor. We're going to have some people on an island, and one by one, they're going to get kicked off. Remember that guy, Richard Hatch, who won season one of Survivor? They manufactured him into a celebrity. You put people on TV enough, and people start thinking that they're somebody. Because why? Because anybody who's anybody is on TV. Anybody who's a celebrity is on TV. Everybody knows if you're on TV, you're a celebrity. That's why I go on TV all the time. I've done 107 television appearances, and yet I'm the most famous guy nobody's ever heard of. Because 107 television appearances around the country, you know, while it looks great on my website, if you go to clintarthur.tv, you look on my media page, you'll see all those appearances on the media page. Yeah. And if you're a listener to this show, you're going to start seeing me for who I am in the eyes of my customers and prospects, which is a celebrity entrepreneur. I manufacture the celebrity for myself. That's the difference. That's the evolution of celebrity. The world is changing to the point where individual entrepreneurs have so much more control and power and influence over their own destiny. That's what I have. It used to be you couldn't get on a TV show if you had a self-published book the way I do. Today, I self-publish everything. Even my little children's book, Daddy Loves You, Daddy Loves You. I wrote it for my daughter. I illustrated it myself. Most people look at it and they're like, did you have some kid illustrate this book? No, I illustrated that book myself. And I was talking, gosh, who was I talking to? I was talking to somebody And they said, oh, we love Daddy Loves You. That's like our favorite book in the house. It's all the pages are dog-eared. Our kids love reading that book. Hey, Daddy Loves You, like my most important book that I ever wrote. See, what happened was I graduate from the Wharton Business School. I go home to get the attaboys from my parents. They get into the hugest fight. My dad storms out of the room, storms out of the house, slams the door. I turn to Mom. I say, you know, Mom, the way he resents you all these years, have you been cheating on Dad? And she says, no, he's not your dad. Your real dad was a doctor at the fertility clinic we went to for 6 years, and he looked just like that guy. And that rocked my whole life. I called the investment bank. I don't want to be an investment banker anymore. And I run off to Hollywood to find myself. And years go by, and I'm writing screenplays. And I was telling you about that girl, that director, and she's dead, right? And then I discover Tony Robbins. And before I discovered Tony Robbins, something else happened to me. I was at one of those film festivals. I was at the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah. And I'm riding on a bus, and I see this woman who looks cute. And I start talking to her on the bus. And then we get back to LA, and I start dating her. She's a very interesting person. Our first date was a date, and she was on a date with another guy at the same time. Oh, and I'm not the only one she would do that. I actually learned that she was dating George Clooney and his best friend at the same time while she was his manager, while she was managing both of them. In any case, she and I go all the way with that woman, and we have a kid. And we were going to be engaged. We were living together. We had the baby. We're living in the Hollywood Hills. And, you know, at that point, all my credit cards had maxed out. And my friend, Charles Sherman, he said, hey, man, you know, you need money. Why don't you drive a cab? I had already applied to the LAPD. I saw these signs, billboards. They're like, LAPD is accepting new officers, starting salary, $49,500. I'm like, wow, $49,500. That's a lot of money. I could use that. That was a lot of money. That was a lot of money. And I applied to the LAPD, and I remember there was two really memorable parts of my application for the LAPD. Number one, I had to do a physical, and you had to run a mile. I think you had to run the mile in under 7 minutes. And I'll tell you what, I ran that mile. I dragged my butt around that course to run that mile, and I was 30 pounds overweight at that point. And when I got done running the mile, some girl comes up to me and she goes, sir, are you okay? I was only 31 years old and she's calling me sir. Sir, are you okay? I must have been white as a sheet because, man, I had to drag my butt around that course. But I ran that mile because that $49,000, I needed that $49,000. Then I had to go to the personal interview. And I go into the interview and there's this sergeant. She's this like tough, mean sergeant. She's like, basically like Nurse Ratched in the form of a police detective sergeant, right? She's like, you don't want to be a cop. You just want to write a book about being a cop. And I'm like, So the LAPD didn't want me, right? And I got nothing left. And my friend says, why don't you start driving a cab? And I tell you, growing up here in New York City, I had a secret. I had a secret hidden desire. You know how like they say certain women have a rape fantasy? I'm not trying to be politically incorrect, but you've heard that term, a rape fantasy. For me, I always had that. My version of a rape fantasy was becoming a taxi driver fantasy because I'd ridden in cabs all my life. And like I always drove like a taxi driver. I drive like a taxi driver. That's why I don't have a car anymore. I just got too many tickets. I can't. But in any case, I drove that taxi. And I was driving the taxi, and meanwhile, baby's mama, we're living together, we're engaged, and we're on a plane flying up to Oregon to go visit her family up there with the baby. The baby's like a year old, and we get in a fight on the plane, and she goes, when we get back to LA, I want you to move out. And I said, what? She goes, that's right, I want you to move out. And I was like, whoa, stirring. stewing over it. Next morning, I wake up at like 5 o'clock in the morning and I wake her up and I go, "You still want me to move out when we get back to LA?" She shakes her head. "Yeah." And I go, "Well, take me to the airport right now." And we go, we get in the car, she drives me to the airport, I fly back to LA. I had already checked on the flights. We get back to LA, I'm packing up my stuff, putting it in boxes. And her friend, her best friend, Val, I don't remember her last name, Val, I used to call her Val Durrell. Val is house-sitting the house, taking care of the dog. And I'm packing up my stuff and I'm sitting in the living room one night, like drinking, like smoking pot and drinking wine with Val. This is way before I quit. And Val goes, "What do you think you could have done different?" And I said, and I'm like bawling my eyes out at this point, "I could have been more." That's exactly what I said. I could have been more. See, that's why this show is about how to be more, do more, and have more. Because ultimately, you need to be more, or else you're going to end up getting kicked out of the house and losing custody of your kids and having to write a book. See, that's where I was with Daddy Loves You. I had to write this book called Daddy Loves You because our agreement, when we finally came to an agreement about what we were going to do, I didn't even... Like, I had nothing going on, and my dad calls me up. My dad who raised me, right? He calls me up. He's like, "When you go see Sarah, make sure you bring your checkbook." It all comes down to the checkbook. And so I bring the checkbook, and we come up with a number. I'm going to pay her $482 a month. Happened to be the exact amount of her car payment on her Mercedes 350e. I think that's what it was. She's driving a Mercedes 300 E-Class. I'm driving a taxi, and I'm paying for her Mercedes. Whatever. And time goes by, and I'm supposed to get one night a week with my daughter. And in the meantime, I'm like, you know, what about the rest of the time? And how do I stay in touch with a kid who's only a year old, a year and a half old? Right. So when it was her second birthday, I made a book. It wasn't her second birthday. It was her fifth birthday. It's her fifth birthday. I made this book. You know how you read these kids their nighttime stories, their bedtime stories, you know, Good Night Moon, the gorilla story, the cricket story, you know, all those stories, right? So I wrote her this book called Daddy Loves You. And it was about how I was hoping, like, every time when I would go to visit her, I would put her to sleep and I would read her the book, Daddy Loves You. And what I was hoping was that on the nights when I did not have custody, that somebody else would read her the book so that she would know that even when I wasn't there, that Daddy loved her. This is the most important thing I've read, most important project I've ever done, because did you know, like, 25% of American kids don't grow up with both parents in the house? And my daughter became a victim of that statistic when she was only a year old. And beyond that, I'll tell you, beyond that, I read in Forbes magazine that full 30% of all people don't even know who their real dad is. See? And the interesting part for me is that I wrote that book, Daddy Loves You, thinking that I was writing it for her. But really, I realize in retrospect that the thing that's been driving me all my life is not knowing my biological father. That's been driving me to want to become so famous that maybe daddy will see me one day. Maybe one day daddy will love me. And while that has not happened, the times when I've come closest to healing that wound in my heart have been the times when I've had the opportunity to share my unique message on the Today Show with Brooke Shields or on Fox Business Channel or CNN or on stages at Harvard, at Coca-Cola, Mercedes, Microsoft, etc. And the other times have been the times of my good friends who start out as my clients and students, and then they become my good friends when they become celebrities. Through the process of becoming celebrities, when they get to fulfill their dreams, when they're sending me text messages like, "This is my dream come true, Clint," and I get them all the time. And I appreciate it. I love it all the time. But this book, Daddy Loves You, see, I've been on big TV shows with this book, self-published, self-illustrated on Amazon. It, you know, it's just a little self-published book, but the message is so important. And that's really the work that I do, is all about messages. And I've been studying, how do you get your message out? Now, if you're an expert of any kind, a doctor, lawyer, financial advisor, an author, a speaker, a coach, then you have a message. Your message is whatever your message is. And today, in this day and age, you as an independent person, you have more power than ever before. You can go on TV. You can get selfie photos. There didn't even exist any selfie photos in the past. Now you can get these selfie photos with celebrities. And if you go to my website, clintarthur.tv, you can see the way I'm using all these selfie photos to position myself as a celebrity in the eyes of customers and prospects. And you can be doing that too. And I do it to the point where I'm hunting down the celebrities. I'm hunting the unicorns. And in order to make that easy for my clients, I have put together over the years a series of events, and usually they're $10,000 events to come and speak at one of my conferences at a very important place and to be mentored by me as a speaker so that you have stories to tell. You can tell your personal stories in a way that's powerful and moving and entertaining. And usually they're $10,000 events. I wanted to have something else, and I wanted to take my whole thing to a whole new level, because I really honestly believe that when your life begins where your comfort zone ends. That's what I said to Brooke Shields on the Today Show. She's like, you know, Clint, you know, you say that you have to get comfortable getting outside of your comfort zone. I said, yes, life begins where your comfort zone ends. And she goes, that sounds scary. I said, yeah, well, when it's scary is when it's good. And believe me, I was very scared going into this whole Carnegie Hall event. I got my event coming up September 26, 7, and 8. Hey, people, if you're listening to this show and you're a New Yorker, you're right here in New York City, you got to come to the Carnegie Hall event, the Living Legends of Entrepreneurial Marketing, and come and hunt a unicorn. Okay, I got Martha Stewart coming to this event. Yeah, Martha Stewart, the famous Martha Stewart, who just recently sold her company to a major international conglomerate. She's almost a billionaire. She was in a prison cell not that long ago, and today she's almost a billionaire, having gone back to the top. I mean, she's hosting a show with my main man Snoop, a cooking show together. Who's a bigger celebrity today than Snoop? Not many people. She's at the top of the world, having come back from what she came back from, and you know what she came back from. Then I got Ice-T and Coco. Ice-T started out, he was a grunt in the U.S. Army, became a gangster and then a Grammy Award-winning recording artist. Now he's a multifaceted entrepreneur, producer of reality series, documentary films. His wife, Coco Austin, she's made a whole career out of just being her. Yeah, she and he make tons of money just because of who they are. And they're going to be there, and you can get photos with them. If you're VIPs, you can come in and hunt the unicorns and get professional photos with Martha Stewart and Ice-T and Coco and Jerry from Ben & Jerry's, the guy. He mixed up some cream and sugar in a bathtub in a garage in Vermont, in a gas station in Vermont, and turned it into a gigantic, famous, international household brand that everybody loves. You know, and here's the thing. You think about Häagen-Dazs. Häagen-Dazs is a great ice cream. You think about Baskin-Robbins. It's a great ice cream. But you don't have the same kind of warm, fuzzy feeling you do about Ben & Jerry's. See, you think about Ben & Jerry's ice cream, and it's like, if you could pick any one of those three, you're going to pick Ben & Jerry's. It just has a certain special, powerful quality that those other two corporate brands don't have. See, Ben & Jerry's ice cream feels like just friendlier. You like it more than Baskin-Robbins. Who cares about it, Baskin-Robbins? I mean, it's good, but you don't feel that same kind of friendly feeling that you do towards Ben & Jerry's ice cream. Why not? How do you do that? How do you get that kind of a product quality attribute? Remember I was talking about Famous Amos cookies? What's the, you know, somehow because Famous Amos is attached to the Famous Amos cookie, that's really the only kind of like feeling you have about that cookie that would get you to buy it is because, oh, well, Famous Amos. And you kind of, for some reason, you kind of have some kind of a affinity or liking about Famous Amos. Well, with Ben and Jerry's ice cream, man, think about how powerful the liking of Ben and Jerry's ice cream is compared to Famous Amos cookies. It's better than Famous Amos cookies, and it's way better than Baskin-Robbins or Häagen-Dazs. Those are cold corporate brands. But Ben and Jerry's, how do you make a brand like that? And then when you have a photo with them, see, this is what I do. Notice I've been telling stories about celebrities all day today, right? That's what I do. I tell stories about celebrities. That's basically my marketing these days. Oh, by the way, P.S., I'll key you in on this. This whole show has been marketing to you, marketing me as a celebrity in the eyes of you, my customers and prospects, right? Doing it through storytelling, positioning me as somebody special. Celebrity storytelling, which I got from hunting the unicorns, the celebrities. So come to Carnegie Hall, and at Carnegie Hall, I'm going to be asking the unicorns questions. Some of the questions will come from the community. Like, part of this whole Carnegie Hall event, the Living Legends event, is I'm going to be doing preparatory webinar trainings for the attendees. I'm going to train you on how to get the most out of this whole thing. Not just how to network effectively at this event, that's part of it. How do you network effectively at this event? But also, I'm going to be talking about how you can pose properly in the photos if you're a VIP. And then I have this other technique, and this is really funny. I used to do this when I would go to conferences. I was, in particular, I'd go to this one conference, and I would make reports. Hey, everybody, this is Clint Arthur. I'm here at this conference today, and what I learned in the morning session was this, this, and this, right? That's what I would say. I would call those reporting videos, and I would post them on YouTube, and, you know, that's what I would do. And I kept doing it until I went to one of the conferences, and they specifically prohibited reporting videos from being published during or at the conference. Like, that was a violation of the terms and agreements. The terms and conditions of attending the conference. They specifically prohibited what I was doing, because what I was doing was using their conference to add value to me and my personal brand. And what I'm saying to you is, you should be coming to Carnegie Hall, Living Legends. You should be making a video that's like, hey, everybody, this is Joe Smith, and I'm here at Carnegie Hall with Martha Stewart and Iced Tea and Coco. And, you know, today, Martha was talking about how to come back from adversity. And what I really appreciated about what Martha said was X, Y, and Z. You should be at the conference making videos like that, using the status of Carnegie Hall, using the status of Martha Stewart and Jerry from Ben & Jerry's and Iced Tea and Coco and Michael Gerber, author of The E-Myth Revisited, and Dan Kennedy, No BS, and Hal Elrod, my student Hal Elrod, who has become somebody special in the eyes of so many people. Have you read or heard about his book, The Miracle Morning? He was on the Today Show last week, July 16th, he was on the Today Show talking about making miracles and his book, The Miracle Morning. He's created a movement. He sold more than 2 million copies of his book around the world with a royalty of $8. Because why? He self-publishes that book the way I self-publish books. I haven't sold no 2 million books, but Hal Elrod, my student, has. And I remember when he first came to me, he's like, signs up for Celebrity Launchpad, my TV publicity training, because why? All celebrities go on TV, and you got to go on TV if you really want to be a celebrity. And he signs up for Celebrity Launchpad, and then he calls me the next day. I'm sorry, Clint. I talked it over with my wife, Ursula, and we realized we just can't afford to come to Celebrity Launchpad. I'm like, hey, man, you got to come to Celebrity Launchpad. You got a message that you got to get out there, and we got to make it happen, and we'll just work out the payment terms to make the number something you can afford. And we figured out a number, because I'm very lucky. I'm making a lot of money. I'm not looking for any one person to pay my rent this month or next month or ever. I'm doing great. So I'm just looking for people who want to have more impact, influence, and income, who want to make a difference and a fortune sharing their message on local TV and on very important stages in very important places and with major celebrities. And that's the unicorn hunting part. I'm looking for people who want to come and hunt unicorns. And I'm On this episode, I'm making a very super special offer. Hey, if you're listening to this episode of The Greatest Show of All Time, go to livinglegends2019.com, where the tickets are for the Living Legends event at Carnegie Hall, 26, 27, 28 of September, and put in the code WABC. Put in the code WABC. This week only, put in the code WABC, and you are going to be so thrilled when you see the giant chunk of discount that you're going to get off of any ticket that you buy. Do it. Be there. You got to be there. If only just to learn from these living legends and to be able to make those reports and to get the training and the underlying educational materials that come part. It's not just a ticket to an event. There's a whole package of valuable training materials that you need if you want to break through and have more impact, influence, and income. If you're a VIP, not only are you going to have VIP networking lunches and dinners, but you're also going to be getting photos with Martha Stewart, Ice-T and Coco, Jerry from Ben & Jerry's, all of the celebrities, all of them, including me. And I'll look forward to seeing you there at the Living Legends event at Carnegie Hall, September 26, 7, and 8, livinglegends2019.com, coupon code WABC. I promise you, you'll be thrilled. I particularly want people who are learning, starting out. You can't reinvent the wheel, guys. If you want to reinvent the wheel, you're never going to make it. You got to learn from people who have been there, done it, and have cashed the checks, like me and my mentors who are going to be there. I will see you at Carnegie Hall. And until next week, I thank you for listening to The Greatest Show of All Time. I am Clint Arthur, your host, and I am dedicated to helping you be more, do more, and have more. I'll see you next week here on The Greatest Show of All Time, WABC Radio in New York City. Be more, do more, have more. Clint Arthur out.